Cancer kills more than 500,000 men and women in the United States each year. That number continues to go up. The numbers aren't as high as in Canada, but they're still alarmingly high as well. Why can it be reduced? What are the politics behind the suppression of safe, cost-effective, cutting-edge cancer cures? Up next, Dr. John Epsley on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Dr. John Epsley is with us tonight. He's been involved with clinical research specializing in cellular regeneration and accelerated wound repair for the past 30 years. In 1995, he perfected a unique and novel rapid regenerative electrical acupuncture technique. And currently, Dr. Epsley has just completed a comprehensive two-year retrospective study of the above emerging field of medicine spanning the global peer-reviewed medical literature. His immediate plans are to write a couple of books on the subject, scheduled to be published later this year. Both will be entitled Overcoming Advanced Cancer, Curing versus Controlling Terminal Cancer. And here he is on Coast to Coast, Dr. John Epsley. Dr. John, how are you?
I am very good, George. Glad to be here tonight.
You too. Those statistics, which I pulled up from the American Cancer Society, were based on 2008 of more than 500,000 people dying just in the United States alone. Worldwide, I guess it's got to be huge, huh?
It is. In fact, there are some stats that show in 2005 it surpassed heart disease as the number one killer.
Oh, my gosh. Now, your work has been primarily to investigate alternatives, safe, cost-effective alternatives. Let's talk a little bit first about this word, this C word, John, cancer.
Sure.
What is that?
Well, you know, we have to take a step back and look at cancer in an entirely different way. Imagine a cell that has gone into a low-energy state. That's where all chronic disease happens. That's where inflammation happens. I heard your last guest talking about heart disease.
Yeah.
President Clinton. All inflammation underlies this low energy state. For example, people who are properly medicated with thyroid hormone, I'm talking about the natural thyroid hormone,
mm-hmm.
their inflammatory state in their body goes way down. Another example, Broda Barnes, MD, PhD, showed that of his 1,500 patients that he kept track of over 30 years, he only had 4 patients have any sort of heart disease whatsoever.
Wow.
Now, the stat should have been well over 300 should have had heart disease. So thyroid reduces that inflammatory potential to an extreme. Now, what we're talking about also with thyroid hormone, and it's the natural complex now, it's not in the synthetic drug, is the ability to bring this low energy state of the cells up to their proper level. The problem is, George, that the diagnostics for testing for proper or normal thyroid function seem to be really skewed. And we refer back to the 1941 publication in the New England Journal of Medicine that Broda Barnes published in. Very quickly back then, they only had these chambers that they stuck people in to determine if their thyroid was working properly.
Okay.
And in a nutshell, after 6 hours, they could tell by how much carbon dioxide you breathed out and how much oxygen you pumped in and what your body temperature was, if your thyroid was normal or not. Well, he took that and made a simple test of taking your temperature under your arm before you get out of bed in the morning, and he determined what the normal body temperature should be if your thyroid was normal. Lastly, normal blood work has a 1,400% difference between its high normal and its low normal reading. Any statistician will tell you that that span of difference between the high and low normals makes the test not as accurate as if when the test had a smaller range between those two. In the case of taking your temperature under your arm, there's only a 14% difference between the high and the low normal range. So you can see that the underarm temperature test, which he invented, is by far the most accurate way of...
It's the cheapest, too, isn't it?
It's extremely cheap, George, and non-invasive, and it will show up the preconditions for both heart disease and cancer in most patients years and years
in advance. What should the temperature be if you're doing a test like that at home?
Under the arm with a good digital thermometer that's accurate, and it should be set and kept in place and reset 2 or 3 times before you read it, because most are a little sluggish.
Right.
It should be 98.0 plus or minus 2, and it's better than the mouth because you could have an infection in the teeth and not know it.
Okay, so if it's way too low, what does that mean?
Well, it means that inflammatory potentials will be raging in the body. It's probably the number one cause of obesity. The C-reactive protein, which is high in heart disease, is there, as well as in cancer. So all of these chronic illnesses have an underlying common denominator, of which this master hormone plays probably the most important role.
That's incredible. And if it's way too high, obviously you have a fever, and you know that, right?
Exactly. And on top of this, this whole thing about inflammation is spot on. The ways in which that normal inflammatory reactions take place in the body are extremely healthy, but there's a brake system to it. So it's not that you want to stop the inflammatory process, because that can actually entice white blood cells to, for example, to digest cancer cells or infections. You want to balance it, and thyroid hormone is one of the great things that helps that to happen.
John, how did you become interested and involved in cancer research?
You know, George, I had a mother who graduated number one in her class from Columbia Presbyterian Nursing School in 1945. She was a great nurse, and in 1971, she came down with an acute event in her stomach that turned out to be an ovarian cyst that was loaded with cancer cells.
Oh, jeez.
It ruptured, and she bent over, and she had basically a few weeks to live.
Those cells must have just raced through her body.
There you go. Yeah. That's right. You took the words right out of my mouth. So she then, being a pretty smart lady, decided to go the conventional route, which is fine, but I have a plan B. And we studied up about Latril, which at that time was being seriously investigated by Sloan Kettering.
Well, and that was from apricots, right?
Yeah, it does come from a number of different seeds.
And yeah.
We'll talk about raw food factors in a while, but
sure.
In all cases, these types of cancer cures are found in those types of foods.
Why does mainstream medicine that doesn't have a cure for cancer, they hit you with radiation, they pump you with chemotherapy, why are they so opposed to some of these alternative natural remedies?
Well, imagine this. It's a great question, George, and I like the way you put that. Imagine this. Science had an opportunity back in the late 1800s to go in one or two different directions with looking at the cell. They opted to go the wrong way. So the entire medical curriculum that's taught, whether you're an osteopath, a medical physician, a chiropractor, a naturopath, it's all been wrong. The colloidal state of gel state dynamics in cells, like, Jell-O?
Yeah.
Where you have little pieces of fruit sticking in it. Imagine that Jell-O, you start shaking it just a little bit, and those pieces of fruit can kind of bounce off of each other.
Right.
Well, we're going to get into that a little bit later. That's the essence of life, and that only happens in a suspended state where surface areas create surface energy that allows life to occur at normal body temperatures. In regular chemistry, you got to heat the darn thing up in order for the chemical reaction to take place at a usable level, right?
Right.
Well, cancer produces energy extremely inefficiently because this colloid state or this gel state is really skewed. It's really messed up. But in normal cells, this Jell-O with these little fruit particles floating around, they just bounce around like crazy at high speeds, and they produce all the energy we need to stay healthy.
Okay, I want you to explain a little bit more of that, John, when we come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Our special guest, Dr. John Apsley, as we're talking about some alternative remedies for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. John Apsley. John, after your mother died, you really picked up an intense study to try to find some natural cures to cancer, didn't you?
I did. And the first book I picked up was by Edward Griffin, entitled World Without Cancer. And I'm telling you, that is an education right there. That's a real eye-opener about what's really going on with our cancer establishment.
Don't ask me why, but I have always thought, even when I was younger, I'm talking about in my teens, that everybody possesses cancer cells. It's your resistance, your body's ability to keep it at bay. That's the difference between who gets it and who doesn't.
That's exactly right. But we're going to talk about what that system is, because no one's ever explained that before, have they?
No, not at all.
That's what we're That's why we're here tonight.
Now, let's get into where we left off before the break got us, and that is some of these real causes and cures of cancer. And you were talking about the cell energy. Let's explain that a little bit more.
Okay, we're gonna dive right down into this right now. I mentioned right before the break that the med schools aren't being taught this, nor is oncology itself aware of this. And this is what we're going to dive right into right now. Imagine this, George. We have 100,000 mutations that occurs each and every single day in every single one of our cells, just in the nuclear core of the cells where the genes are. And at the age of 25, if you're healthy, you repair all of those mistakes each day. Now,
okay.
That's 100,000 times 75 trillion human cells. That's 75 with 17 zeros after it. Okay? That's a half a billion times more mistakes repaired than the national debt that we have.
That old body's working around the clock, isn't it?
Exactly. So what is that system? What is that system that operates at near quantum speeds that can repair, that, as you stated, can go in and clean up where there's a little cancer cell here and there when it does arise?
It's like a virus software for a computer.
Exactly. It's that fast, too. So this is what's not been studied in the halls of our cell physiology until a small group of extremely dedicated biophysicists started picking up the study when they met Max Gerson, who had a cure for cancer that was actually studied by the U.S. Senate in 1947. I'll get into that in a little while. But they took up the study because they had just invented the most advanced form of MRI devices known at the time, called the phonar. And Dr. Damodian, who is an MD, PhD from Harvard, had invented this MRI, and they determined that they couldn't visualize the cancer on their software imaging compared to normal cells. This is really cool information.
Yeah.
So they hired these biophysicists, and they said, look, we can see in detail the normal healthy tissue, but when we run across a cancer, we can't see it. It's all blurry. And these biophysicists figured out that the water was different inside the tumor compared to normal body water. So as a result of that, the idea of water being this gel state, being this high gain energy state for cells, came to be known. And it's still being underexposed today in the cell physiology journals, which is very, very unfortunate. That one bit of information, that water is differently shaped in healthy cells, would transform the entire way that we treat cancers, but also the way in which that we can avoid iatrogenesis, which is to use a drug for the proper disease in the proper amount, and yet it induces illness. Because that's not being done when we develop our drugs, and including chemotherapy, we're not seeing how or why or how to prevent those drugs causing harm to the normal human cells.
No, not at all. Why is it, too, during an operation with someone who has cancer, the minute you open them up, it seems like oxygen hits these cells, these cancer cells, and they're gone fast.
Yes, exactly what my mom said. She was in charge of the operation theater in Evanston, Illinois, and she was the top nurse there.
She witnessed everything.
Oh, yeah. And whenever they opened up someone, they were full of a few tumors. They just closed them up because they knew that, you know, the person had much longer to live. But there's a lot of reasons why that air exposure, specifically oxygen, under the right conditions, can be extremely healing and can reverse cancer.
Ah, okay.
But that's part of an entire program that we're talking about now. So getting back to this one point, because we're almost there. If we were able to identify what that system is in our body that could repair that 7.5 quintillion mutations that occurs each day in our bodies, and we could treat that, our own bodies then would fix the cancer, wouldn't it?
They should.
Exactly.
That's dramatic.
Okay, so as I said, at the very end of the 1800s, they had a choice to make in cell physiology. They could either go with the well-traversed and well-visited studies of salt chemistry and organic chemistry and even biochemistry, or they could go with colloidal chemistry, which was very difficult to understand because the movement of particles in the gel state takes place at such rapid speeds, it defies normal analysis, especially back then.
And what do you mean by colloidal chemistry?
Things that are suspended in a solution rather than dissolved in solution. So let me give you an example, because you're right on track. Let's look at Einstein in 1904. He, with a mathematician, got together to prove that atoms existed. And he took some special type of ink that didn't dissolve in water but suspended itself in water.
Ah,
and you could,
okay.
You could see it under a microscope, and these little tiny particles of ink in balls would form, and they would start shaking. And the smaller that the ball was of the ink, the faster the shaking occurred. Well, imagine that you reduce that down to the size of an atom, the smallest unit. That thing is shaking just as much, producing just as much energy almost as it is a piece of matter.
Okay.
That's called quanta. That's what life is. And that's being missed in cell physiology today.
Are any doctors looking at this?
Yes, fortunately there are. Max Gerson was the first. He didn't know that he was actually doing it to the extent that I'm explaining it now, but based upon his work, after World War II, the Senate, Congress actually got together and declared war against cancer. It was the first war against cancer. And they brought him in because he had some astounding results with terminal cancer patients. He had all their files, all their x-rays, all the surgery reports, all their past treatments. And five of his best cases actually walked in with him into the Senate chambers. When he finished his presentation, the Senate was ready to fund his method with full funding so that probably today we wouldn't have this problem of cancer. That night, three senators were approached by special interests, and they refused to vote for him the next day. That one evening was historic in terms of how we approach cancer.
The lobby took over, right?
The lobby took over, right?
It happens time and time again, John.
Well, he got somewhat reprieved in the late 70s when Gilbert Ling and Francis Cope from the research facility that Dr. Damodian had put together picked up the baton and brought this forth in the peer-reviewed medical literature, specifically in cell physiology. They have proven that the cell is a gel with this funny type of water, and they know exactly how that special type of water is made, and with the ingredients being present, that's how these mistakes in our genes and in our cells of our body, the internal parts of the cell as well as the outside of the cells, repair themselves each and every single day.
And can this happen with anybody? And we're going to have you just outline this for us tonight, but can cells be repaired in anybody?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Your body's supposed to do it.
Your body is supposed to do it, yeah.
Let's go through some of the players involved here, John.
Okay.
Again, Dr. Broda Barnes, explain.
Yeah. Okay. Broda Barnes, we mentioned about the thyroid and the underarm temperature test. Unfortunately, his work, which started to really take off until the mid-1950s, very, very successfully, it was replaced when they wanted to take some blood work and replace his underarm temperature test. And so what they did was they made the mistake of going to like 20,000 college kids in somewhere in the Midwest that didn't have enough iodine in their diet to make their thyroid work, and they just assumed that first group of college kids had healthy thyroids. And then they went in and analyzed different aspects of the blood, and they determined from that what the normals were. Okay?
All right, now, I'm with you.
All right, now, there's been lots of updates of that original research, but it's still, as I said, there's this 1,400% difference between high and low normals compared to 14% difference between the underarm test, which means it's extremely accurate. There's just too much of a gap to use blood work to assume that when someone comes in with frank symptoms of hypothyroidism, that because their blood work says they don't have low thyroid, that you dismiss it out of hand. Now, Orion Trust at the University of Alabama was the first to recognize candidiasis, which is very strongly related to cancer. He said that because he taught clinical evaluations to the med students at the school, and I've met him, I've had some conversation with him many years ago, he said that when you're discovering a new disease and you don't know what it is, you can't diagnose it very, very readily with your patients. So what you have to do is you have to take a half hour, an hour, maybe even 2 hours, interviewing your patient, getting all of their symptoms. And then when you have all that data, and then you do the blood work, and you find out that the blood work does not confirm what your clinical findings are, you're supposed to dismiss the blood work. You go with your clinical findings.
All right. If one does this temperature test, right? How do you know if your thyroid is hyper or hypo, up or down? How do you know that?
Well, let's just go with low thyroid because that's the most common.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, we can talk about the other on another occasion, but it's so important that the low thyroid condition is discovered and treated properly. That will mean that the body temperature under the arm, when you get before you get out of bed in the morning, that's basal temperature, is under 97.8. If it's under 97.8, to that extent, you have likely, very likely, low thyroid.
And should you check it a couple times, making sure you're holding it right under there and all that?
That is correct. You don't want to strain your arm. You just want to put it across so that, you're not turning on the muscles with isometric exercise because that'll heat up, right?
Right.
It needs to be basal. You need to be in bed for about 5 hours. But, yeah, then you take just a regular digital thermometer, stick it in there, cover your arm over your body just lightly so it's firmly in there, relax, turn it on, let it beep so it's done once, then click it off and click it on again, and then wait till it beeps the second time before you read it. And then that, if it's an accurate digital, it'll tell you if you likely have low thyroid.
Okay, if you do, what do you do?
Ah, now this is so perfect. There is a huge problem with the correct treatment of thyroid. First of all, if a physician takes the time to properly document your signs and symptoms upon interview, and he or she then uses the temperature test, there's perfect justification then for you to have thyroid medication prescribed. But those are big ifs. Most physicians are too busy to do all that. But if the blood and the physician will also order blood work, and the blood work will come back almost always in the normal ranges, which is a false negative.
And he'll tell you you're okay.
Well, not if he or she has read certain books and understands.
Right. I mean, generally, if they don't understand that, they'll say you're okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But let's say that the physician isn't extremely well trained, but very well trained, and they prescribe synthetic thyroid hormone for you.
Okay.
It won't work for this purpose. It has to be the natural. Now, without getting into a lot of details, synthetic thyroid is mostly T4. Which is inactive in the body. The body has to convert it into T3 to work, right? Well, guess what converts it? It's the liver, and the liver requires enough thyroid to convert the other inactive thyroid into active thyroid. So if you're already low thyroid and you take T4, your liver can't convert it into the active form for you to use.
It's not going to work, though.
It's not going to work. So if you use natural desiccated thyroid, which there's a lot of problems now with supplies right now, but it is available. You just have to dig for it. Then it contains all of the ingredients or the complex for that thyroid hormone to work in your body. In addition to that, there's also T3 that you can be prescribed. And, of course, that takes care of most of the problem as well. Most people that have serious illness need a combination of the both.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. And if I recall, when I got my test some time ago, I think it was like a T3 test that I had. But does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But let me tell you the most accurate blood test for thyroid function. It's not the TSH that everyone uses. It's not just the free T3 or the reverse T3 or the T4, all those levels by themselves. That doesn't help. What helps is when you take the ratio between the free T3 divided by the reverse T3. There's a ton more of this reverse T3 that does not work and also blocks the only T3 that does work, which is called free T3. So if you have too much reverse T3, it will block your ability to use what T3 free that you're producing, and even if the numbers are normal. So, again, this is where most physicians and even endocrinologists are missing the boat.
And so what we're doing tonight is going through a stage and stages of what people can do on their own, first and foremost. And you believe starting with the thyroids is the critical point.
Absolutely, George. That's right.
Okay. Next up, Alexis Carrel, doctor.
Oh, what a fascinating man. He was an anti-Semitic. Wound up getting himself in big trouble by joining the Vichy in France after.
Yeah, geez. Yeah.
And wound up horribly regretting it. He learned a big lesson about what Nazism was all about. But prior to that, this guy was fascinating, and I hope to blow away a lot of people who think they might know a little bit about Carrel. First of all, I have I have his entire library. I have studied this man for at least 20 years. He's my big hero. There are things about him that most people don't know, and most people have been told aren't true, that he actually did accomplish. For example, he was able to take animal tissue, put it into a petri dish, and keep it healthy for 32 years.
32 years?
32 years, absolutely no. And it was chicken heart. It was actually beating the whole time. Now, there was criticism that was completely bizarre that said that he couldn't possibly have done that, and it was, unfortunately, it was accepted as fact. But I can just blow that information away. It was crazy that they did that. But the point is that in 1912, he discovered how to keep basically any type of animal tissue alive forever in its normal, healthy state. Now, going back to when he graduated from med school, just at the end of the 1800s, he was the brightest, perhaps, that France had ever produced. He was a Frenchman. He was on his way, literally on a train, to receive his appointment to be one of the heads of the French medical establishment. He was on the train. Next to him was a gal, young gal, about 20, who had terminal cancer in its end stages. He didn't know it when he hopped onto that particular part of the train, but this entire group that was with him was on its way to Lourdes to get the water into
the holy water, right?
The holy water, right. This is the structured water, the gel water, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So he was just, you know, going by, and he realized that this poor woman was crying out, so he gave her some morphine to ease her pain, and then the train stopped, and she was incapable of getting herself to get the water by herself. He had just given her some morphine.
Right. She was out of it.
She was out of it, so but she wasn't in pain any longer either. So her friends got off the train, got the water, and brought it back. Now, Carell didn't leave the train. He was sitting right there. As he watched, they doused her with the water from Lourdes.
She didn't drink it.
She did. She couldn't drink it. She was passed out.
Okay.
She had an instantaneous healing. Instantaneous. She was 100% well within a few brief moments.
Just by rubbing the water on her and just pouring it all over.
They poured it over. And there's a reason for that. Now, and I've been able to put that together. Well, Carell was besides himself. He had examined her prior to giving her the morphine. He had witnessed how deadly near death that she was, and here she was within a few brief moments completely well. Now I'm going to jump forward just for a second. It turns out this gal who stayed in touch with Carell over his career lived 2 years longer than Carell.
Wow.
That's what we call a best case series, proving that treatment worked for that cancer. I'll go into best case series.
Yeah, we're gonna take this break. We're right at the top, Dr. John Apsley. I want to get back into this. This is fascinating. Lourdes in France and that water has always fascinated me, and I want to talk to you about that too, about those properties there. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, where we're with Dr. John Apsley. John, let's get back to this incredible story and the work of Alexis Carrel, M.D.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. You're right. Had it not been for this discovery about the water at Lourdes, we would not have any organ transplants today.
Really? Tell me why.
Let me explain.
All right.
This event that he witnessed with this woman with end-stage cancer having a miraculous recovery within a matter of a few minutes, occurred about 1902. He was on his way on that same train to receive his appointment, basically to the head of the French NIH. At that time, I believe it was the Pasteur Institute, but don't hold me to that. At any rate, he arrived at that meeting, and he was so excited by what he had just seen that he stopped his colleagues from proceeding with the ceremony until he could describe to them in detail what he had just witnessed. At the end of his review of what he had observed, they dismissed him from the country.
Oh, my gosh.
They rode him out of town as if they were going to tar and feather him.
Instead of being inquisitive, they tossed him.
Because this was impossible. This was, remember, the Middle Ages came out of a war, basically, between science and the church.
Did they have the capability to do an analysis of the water at that time, John?
No. This is colloidal science that really, until the phonar was, the MRIs came along, we couldn't test these colloidal states because they move too quickly and there's a lot of times they're in more of an energy state than they are in terms of matter.
Mm-hmm.
So until we were able to get like the MRI and special other types of microscopes where it wouldn't interfere with the actual living state of the cell or the water, we couldn't see what was going on. Later on, X-ray diffraction also came in to test what the structure of the waters were. But at any rate, so he left in a hurry. He just grabbed all his stuff and he fled to Quebec. And then lived, because he can only speak French. And he lived there long enough to get a little bit of a handle on English. And then the Rockefeller Institute hired him, I believe, in 1906. It was about 1906, 1907, where they had been trying to make cells, tissue cultures of cells, live in a petri dish so they could begin work with how to sew blood vessels together, with how to do organ transplants, so on and so forth. Well, they were lucky to catch him since he had to flee France.
Yeah.
He happened to be in the Western Hemisphere, and he decided to accept the appointment. And he worked with a guy by the name of Burroughs and a few other top guys who had repeatedly failed at being able to keep normal animal tissue alive for any kind of time period that they could conduct experiments.
And you mean without decaying, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Couldn't do it. So he worked with them and learned their techniques. And then finally in 1912, according to my information, he recalled the Lord's water. And it was the only step that they hadn't tried. This is like Thomas Edison, who did 10,000 experiments before he got the light bulb to work.
Right, exactly.
They had done all that with cell cultures, and they had failed. So it was finally a group of things that related to this water that triggered this thought in Correll about where he could get the equivalent water. And he found a way to do that that's fully described in my books. It was an extract of the embryonic fluids from the same animal source. And when he extracted it, purified it, so didn't heat it, he was completely natural. It was undenatured, they call it. This fluid was able to bathe the chicken heart cells indefinitely as long as he changed it out every 48 hours. Well, this is a single cell layer or just a small number of cells that were bunched together.
Yeah.
So that the oxygen from the air was easily able to penetrate into the cells. So that was the second condition. That was the third condition. The first condition was he had to get the water, which he got from the extract of the raw tissues.
He was close to creating immortality.
He did. He actually did. And then another guy by the name of George Crile picked it up in basically the same form, except he added electricity. And, of course, today we have all these stories about Dr. Frankenstein, right? Well, they were contemporaries, both giants in their mental power. But the point is that three of the conditions were discovered by Correll at that moment. The actual water in its gel state,
mm-hmm.
The detoxification had to be done, a complete replacement every 48 hours or the tissue would die, and it had to be thin enough that it could be exposed to regular ambient air that the oxygen could penetrate the cells effectively.
So that was necessary. You had to do that.
That was necessary. The third thing was neural organization or electrical current. By the way, I received your show is extremely popular today. I've been getting calls and emails. There's a gentleman from Illinois who called me tonight. I think his name is Benedict, who has some sort of electrical device that he's been exploring defeating cancer cells with. I have to catch up with him.
Yeah, check into that.
This was the same thing that George Crile had taken the work of Correll to prove that was part of the four, what I put together as the four pillars, having researched these guys for 30 years.
Now, some, John, who will be very spiritual, will say that the water at Lourdes was because of the apparition of the Virgin Mary. I'm not going to negate that. I mean, all that's possible. Our point is the water was special, right?
Well, we can have another session on that. Believe me, there is a way in which that I can basically prove that there is a mechanism that transfers spiritual information or energy information or mind information of prayers, of thoughts, of positive words like
mm-hmm.
love and,
good,
and
nice music as opposed to horrible music.
Exactly. Into information that the cell uses. I can prove that.
Okay. Well, that's the work of Dr. Emoto. He's done that too, right?
Exactly, and a group of other people as well. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. So the work of Correll, Dr. Alexis Correll, what happened with it?
In 1912, when he added in this, what I put together as the four pillars, he didn't recognize as the four, but he had all the ingredients together. He then was able to keep that chicken heart beating forever.
That's amazing.
It went until from 1912 until 1934.
It was just a little heart, a little chicken heart, and it just
and it kept on growing and everything else. All without it didn't have fear of immunity. You know, germs landed on it. Didn't matter. With these principles, it's an effective form of not only cellular immortality, but also immunity. So in a nutshell, that's why, because he went on from there to prove the techniques, the surgical techniques, to do organ transplants through a series of evolutions. And he got the Nobel Prize on that. And then after he got his butt kicked for being a jerk with other human beings, i.e. the Jews, he won the Nobel Prize in Peace because he finally got together and realized his mistakes. So that's where the first inquisition occurred that I'm aware of for curing cancer with all-natural approaches that deal with colloidal chemistry.
Fascinating. All right. Then we move into Dr. Gilbert Ling, Ph.D.
Yeah. Now, he is the guy we've mentioned before. He is the giant, the greatest cell physiologist and biophysicist of our age. He's still alive. He's 88. I've spoken to him several times. He's just absolutely brilliant. And in 1948, he lectured on this mistake that was made back in the late 1800s when they had to make a decision between looking at regular chemistry to explain the cell function versus colloidal chemistry to explain the cell function. And because that the entire science movement had gone into the former, he had to basically create all the instrumentation, all of the experimental designs, and then repeat it against known standards. And until after 40 years, his discovery is now etched in scientific stone. It's called the AI hypothesis. It's really the AI mechanism because it's proven. It's been repeatedly challenged. It's always turned out to be the case as he has originally described it back in the 70s. And he's just updated it, and he's also published a recent book. He has a website to his own name. It's gilbertling.org, and it gets into this whole thing. But this guy is – it'll take – I mean, if you imagine – if you believe in aliens, this guy is that bright.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're an alien –
he may be one of them, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you can get here through whatever mechanisms that you do, you got to be incredibly advanced in your – in your mental skills.
Absolutely.
This is this individual with cell physiology. So it takes all the other cell physiologists a great deal of frustrating years to even try to catch up with the guy. But he's got hundreds of publications, experimental proofs, repeated procedures, the revision process of being challenged and counter-challenged. All that has been accomplished over these past 40 years.
So he believes, though, that high energy within cells helps to cure cancer, right?
Oh yeah. In fact, he's quantified it. He quantified it in exact equations, in exact units of energy, and the whole works. And he was inspired by Max Gerson.
Fascinating. Okay, next, I've heard of this person. I was on a remote, and we got a couple phone calls from people who wanted us to investigate this. This is the Italian doctor.
Yes.
How does he pronounce his last name? Simonici?
Giulio Simoncini. Yes.
Simoncini. He's the one that uses baking soda?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about him.
Okay. Well, I've met him, spent a lot of time with him in this country, spoken to him many times. This is a really sad and also wonderful story.
Okay. I wanted to get him on, but he does not speak English too well.
But he does. He just said
not for radio.
He's a little bit shy. This... the sweetest man you can imagine, a really true Catholic. This guy was treating the cardinals in Rome for their different illnesses and all that. And he happened to make a serendipitous discovery one day that he was working the pediatrics ward of the cancer hospital in Italy, in Rome. And a lot of kids would have thrush, which is candida, in their mouth.
Okay.
And he started using baking soda, and it would just swab it around in their throat and their mouth and their tongue, and it instantly kills the candida.
Just household baking soda.
Household baking soda. Now, I want to tell you, your listeners ahead of time, that baking soda forms a huge pillar to not only the four principles that we just discussed coming out of Alexis Carrel, but also to the repriming of this repair mechanism that does this near quantum repair rate of the body. So having that, having said that, let's go into his little story now.
Okay.
Sweetest guy you ever met. Well, at any rate, so he was getting great success with treating thrush and children's mouse, and he noticed that when the thrush was really growing in the mouth, that it was white. And after doing a lot of operations and treating a lot of cancers, he noticed that when the cancer was exposed to his eyes, it looked that same whitish appearance that he saw. And he just made that connection. He just looked like it was candida to him.
Okay.
Candida albicans, which is the white form of yeast. And so, white color. So he decided, well, heck, this kid's going to die. That kid's going to die. This kid over here is going to die. Why don't I just see what happens with baking soda? It won't hurt him. And he was able to actually witness firsthand that as he poured strong concentrates of baking soda directly onto a tumor as he was watching in the operation theater, it instantly melted away the outer layers of the tumor.
Instantly.
It just washed it away. You could see healthy red tissue underneath that. Now, tumors are 80% normal tissue.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. So he washed away the surface layer so he could get down to that component, at least part of that tumor, that was normal, healthy, red-looking, pink-looking cells. And then he discovered that by threading in to the artery that feeds that tumor a high concentration of baking soda, that it would melt the cancers instantly, especially if they were 2.5 centimeters or smaller. It would actually just instantly melt away. Well, now, you have to take a step back now because it only works with solid tumors, doesn't work with blood cancers, at least not his approach. And he doesn't know about the rest of this. He doesn't know about when I met him, I decided to stop everything else I was doing and dedicate my life to using that as the fulcrum, as the key repriming agent for this whole way of getting that repair mechanism turn on full blast again, okay? Because I recognize the whole schema of how this baking soda fits into the whole issue, and that's what the books are about. But in a nutshell, what he was able to do was to take folks that hadn't been into any other form of cancer treatment. They were first admissions. And because he was a board-certified oncologist, they went to him first. They had no other prior treatment.
Right.
And so he didn't have the problem that exists with all these immune-compromised patients because they've received huge doses of radiation or multiple courses of chemotherapy before they came to see him for treatment. Well, at that time, under those conditions, even with the advanced cancers, as long as he could treat the tumors in that way, in that specific way, he had a 90% success rate with complete cure.
That's astounding.
Not control, cure. He has patient after patient after patient record that have been around for 10, 12, 15 years that are 100% well, that had multiple huge tumors in their body.
All kinds of cancer now.
All kinds of solid tumors, yes. So when we saw this, I was running a research foundation, and it fit in with the work I was dealing with colloidal chemistry, colloidal metals and medicine. And I wanted to advance it, and I started to get some doctors together. I brought some doctors in, paid for them to attend his seminars. And we were going to do a two-year certification program where we would do grand rounds with him, either in Italy or he'd come over here, and we would just track patients through their complete initial treatment to complete resolution of their disease. That was shut down, and all sorts of hell broke loose. First of all, the technique of threading a catheter into the artery of the tumor has to be done by specialists, and that was immediately blackballed. Secondly, things got really worse for him in Italy, which included several lawsuits and civil criminal suits that came against him, that he won all of them, and also his medical license was revoked.
Now, was that pressure to try to get a guy who was curing cancer with simple techniques? Is that what
Absolutely.
We call the pressure? Okay.
Exactly. This is exactly what happened to Alexis Carrel.
Same thing. The pattern continues over and over again. And we'll get into more of them, too, as a matter of fact. They just keep coming and coming and coming. So what's he doing now? Is he still practicing?
Well, what we will eventually do, if we can pull this off, is we will get this word out. We'll get the books out. We'll bring together the different physicians that can do this, including him. And we hope to put a hospital together slightly offshore of the United States in a friendly nation.
Isn't it unfortunate it can't be here?
Right now it can't be. But that doesn't mean it couldn't be in the future. Once I have a major medical school who will back the research end of it, so that after 5 years of continuous study of every single cancer patient treated, we will then be able to publish those results.
You know, people like even Hoxie, remember that story?
Oh, what a horrible
another
situation.
Thing. These are people who are using natural supplements and natural herbs and just natural items. Sodium bicarbonate is natural, yet they're persecuted. These people are persecuted.
Yes, because people can't believe it can be that simple. But let me explain to you, and you said it, George, let me explain to you why sodium bicarb or baking soda is the quintessential repriming agent of this whole colloidal state. The colloid state, this structured water, is structured because of metals that aren't dissolved in the water. Mm-hmm. It causes the water to arrange itself in a particular way because of the electrical positive-negative charges. The internal components of the cells and the genes are on their outside surface are mostly negatively charged. Not all, but mostly. So the positive metals are always positive. The positive charge of the metals will attract to the protein in the cell, and as it gets too close with all the other metals attracting to it, they repel each other, and there's this pulsation that occurs. That pulsation features this structured watering, or the structuring of the water, which is the transmission of information, like prayers, good thoughts, good music, maybe God's healing vibrations, okay?
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, so those are the three components: metals that are suspended, the special water, and the special proteins that come from foods.
Let's talk more about some of this when we come back. Wow, what a fast night. John, let's get back into the sodium bicarbonate that we're talking about, then we'll move on to Max Gerson again.
Yes. Yes, George. We were just talking about how sodium bicarb is the repriming agent, and what happens is that this gel state, which has to be composed of metals, structured water, and functioning proteins, it has an enemy. And that enemy is that during normal metabolism, huge amounts of hydrogens are produced, and hydrogens are positively charged, just like the metals. So whenever there is a case where the oxygen is low, which pulls the hydrogens normally out, we have a backup. We have sodium bicarb.
Mm-hmm.
We make lots of sodium bicarb. But it decreases every decade of life of our lives after the age of 30. It decreases, I've seen estimates as much as 10 to 14% accrual each decade. So by the time we're in our 50s and 60s, if we have normal pancreas function to begin with, which produces the bicarb, also the stomach, we are really low on bicarb. So the evidence of this is people that are deficient in hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid has been used as a cancer cure and as a cure to infectious agents back at the University of Alabama since the early 20s. But that was when people were healthier, their organ systems, like their thyroid, were working better. There was more minerals in the soil to keep it that way, so we had more of these metals in our cells to make the cells work in high gain. And so these things like hydrochloric acid therapy, one-agent type things worked really well back then, but they don't work so well right now. So the point is that you can't make hydrochloric acid in the stomach without making a ton of baking soda that goes into your bloodstream. So this adaptation, this evolution of how we've put together our body involved baking soda in vast quantities, in 10, 20, 30 grains at a time per meal, to go on the inside of the body to bathe the body with minerals, to bathe the body with alkalinity, to pull the hydrogens out of the cell so that nutrients from the food, i.e. the metals from the food, the minerals from the food, could go back into the cells to cause the cells to repair and to reproduce. one last little side thing here.
Okay.
If you take an enzyme or a protein that requires metals to make it work, it works a billion times slower at normal body temperature in the absence of that metal. So you can't produce energy a billion times slower that you need to conduct normal immunity or to take out these cancer cells, these rogue cancer cells that are growing. It's due to a mineral deficiency. So sodium bicarb comes in. It knows that you spin off hydrogens all the time from any type of food you take in. And it, in addition to oxygen, pulls these excess hydrogens out of the body, out of the cells. By that electrical charge, it's called the ion gradient. When that ion gradient moves in the direction of the hydrogens going out of the cell, guess what happens with the metals that are floating around, just digested from the meal? They rush into the cell. They restructure the water, and they start this pulsation of the enzymes, causing metabolism to work a billion times faster to produce high-gain energy. Does it all make sense now, George?
It does, of course. This is something I've always believed.
This is not being taught in our med schools anywhere. This is the problem.
Why, do they really want to cure cancer?
I think, look, there's just like with our government, there are really good people in our government, and there's some really not-so-good people in our government. In the medical establishment, there are some really, really great people in there, and there's some people that have vested interests.
Right.
There's also a lot of problems with ego. And so what I've tried to do is I love conventional medicine. I have no problems with conventional medicine whatsoever. But I document everything in its proper place. Let me give you an example. A really wonderful reporter that I like, her name is Griffin on Fox News. She's just a great reporter. She just reports the news as it is. She's not a spin artist at all. She has advanced breast cancer. And this poor girl, there's only one type of treatment for her, and that's standard chemotherapy. Well,
that's Jennifer, I think.
Isn't it? Yeah, Jennifer Griffin.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hate to say this, but chemotherapy, when used as a solo therapy, it's only 2.1% effective.
That's it?
Chemotherapy used by itself is only 2.1% effective. That's documented. That's medical fact. And the reason is because nobody's restoring the colloidal state of the cells that does all this repair. Chemotherapy doesn't do that. Let me ask this way. If you had a disease and you had a set of treatments from the outside, how could that possibly compete with the body's ability to repair itself at near quantum speeds?
You couldn't.
You couldn't.
Uh-oh.
So the best thing for
you. We're starting to lose you on the phone a little bit. So go ahead. Let me move you over for a second. And,
okay.
Let's see if you're a little better. Go ahead.
Is that better?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, pretty clean.
Okay.
All right.
So the best thing to do is to put the body into a high-gain state so you're coming from high ground when you're using conventional chemotherapy or radiation therapy or any other type of natural cancer treatment. You go to the high ground first so that it's a strategic position of putting the cells back into a high-energy state. Then you can defeat much better with cancer tools, cancer agents, anti-cancer agents, what you need to do. So going back here to finish up the section on Dr. Simoncini, it turns out that Candida albicans produces an extremely noxious toxin that turns off the three main anti-oncogenes that we have, including the P53, a very, very important gene that protects us from cancer, especially breast cancer. It's devastating to it. Just tiny amounts completely turns it off in the system. Well, most people that have root canals and capped teeth oftentimes unknowingly will have what's called cavitations or osteonecrosis, which is a form of infection,
right,
that's in the root canal or somewhere around the capped tooth.
That's why sometimes dentists will give you antibiotics before the procedure.
Part of the reason. That's right. So, but if the yeast is in there and it's producing this toxin, the lymph from the mouth goes directly to the breast tissue. Hence, we have so much breast cancer today.
Interesting, which is, of course, between that and lung cancer, the two highest incidents for women.
Exactly. And a biophysicist by the name of Bob Jones, who brought Tullio Simoncini over to this country, has proven that. And in fact, his device that helps to detect that had to have this proof in order for the FDA to finally approve his special device that could, it was an ultrasonic diagnostic unit that can detect this called the Cavitat. So, in a nutshell, is how devastating Candida can be, not only within the tumor itself, but also at a distance. Well, baking soda, because it brings the tissues to a high gain state and brings the metals into whatever into the tissue that it's bathing, instantly appears to kill Candida albicans in a certain concentration. There's like an inner cell immunity that not too many people understand that has to do with redox, with oxygen reduction, that is our really how our white blood cells kill cancer. They throw a grenade of a radical oxygen at it, and it breaks it apart. That's one way you kill cancer. And it turns out that it needs metals like iron and copper to do that. And if the white blood cell is full of hydrogens, it has a deficiency of those. And it has what's called a low phagocytic index. It just kind of sits there lethargic, just sitting there saying what to do. Well, baking soda helps that turn that whole thing around so the metals go into the cells everywhere, including the immune cells, and turns them into a high-gain state. So that then should bring us to where we need to be with understanding how baking soda is so essential.
Can you drink baking soda?
Well, let me give you a case of a Montreal case. It's a fascinating case.
A Montreal case? Okay.
Yeah, it's a Montreal case. It answers your question. It's like you're tracking me here telepathically, George.
That's what I do.
It's a little scary. Okay. So I want to tell your listeners right now that if they can sort of figure out what it is that I'm trying to put together in terms of a program, don't do it. You need medical supervision, or you need to be extremely well-educated about what it is that you have to do, because it'll bring a bad name to the entire science of what we're talking about.
And you don't want somebody hurt, too.
No, we don't want to hurt somebody, and we also don't want to prevent them from going off into receiving care from their cancer specialist either. So let me just tell you a case in Montreal. This gentleman allowed me to use his full case, as long as they don't mention his name. I have as complete a records as I can get through digital format. When he was 50, he came down with massive abdominal cancer. It was a carcinoma that just went all over the organs of his lower stomach area. And he had had standard treatments at the Canadian hospitals. Everything that could be done for him was done. And after a series of years, they told him, look, we've given you everything we can do for you. It's time for you to go home and die. And so this guy was pretty spunky, as most Canadians are that I've met. And he went home and decided that he was going to put together his own protocol, having known nothing of Tullio Simoncini. He just put some things together in his head, very simple, things that he could afford. The first thing he did was to buy a juicer and decided that for 30 days he was going to drink nothing but fresh juices. And then the second component to this involved a very unique way, a very special way, a way in which that I'm not going to describe on this show, because it has to be done under close supervision, with using baking soda. And after 30 days, his cancer was completely gone.
That's incredible.
He's alive over 10 years later, and he feels great. He just has some osteoarthritis.
What was the Steve McQueen story?
Oh, this is a cool story, too. We're talking about that. Remember, Tullio's had his license taken away. Gilbert Ling has never been recognized for his work.
Mm-hmm.
Max Gerson had to leave the country. I'll mention that in a second. Carell had to leave France. We've had all this stuff, right? Well, Steve McQueen had mesothelioma, which is usually from asbestos. And it's completely incurable. So anything that he could do that would cure him is absolute proof that whatever it is that he did worked. You don't need to do double-blind studies and all that. It's called a best-case series. absolutely accepted now by NIH and National Cancer Institute. They don't like it, but and they don't use it, but it has to be accepted as pure as absolute science that somewhere something caused a cure there because nothing else will work. They know nothing else will work to cure mesothelioma. Okay, well, he wound up with Dr. William Donald Kelly. And then from there, he went, and most people don't know this, he went, he was, he got much, much better, but he was down to like 90 pounds. And he went down to Mexico and was treated at the American Biologics Hospital in Tijuana under Dr. Canu. Dr. Canu was one of five students who had received training in basically the stem cell therapy of the last century. It was done with raw glandular extracts that emulated what Alexis Carrel had found, kept tissues alive forever in a healthy state. Well, they had perfected this under Paul Niehans in Germany back in 1929.
It's amazing they knew these things then.
Yeah, they do. And the science keeps going back around.
Yeah.
You know, they knew it. They knew it, George. Well, Canal told me, I talked with him on the phone, and he said, Steve McQueen came to see him. He was at 89 pounds, 90 pounds, and he started giving him the injections of the glandular extracts, the raw glandular extracts from either shark material or sheep fetuses that the body won't reject. And his immune system was coming back. His weight was gaining. Kelly had done an amazing had really helped him tremendously. But Canal took it the final distance. Well, Steve McQueen was feeling great. He was up to 125 pounds. He had just married fairly recently, and he was a very vain guy because he was a world-class actor, right? He had the
sure.
look at all.
Okay. Absolutely.
Well, he didn't have a change of clothes, and he didn't live too far away in California, so he asked Canal if he could hop in his car with his wife and drive home so he could get a change of clothes, and then he'd come right back. And Canal didn't want him to go. But he said, look, if you have to go get some clothes, I understand, but come right back. So at this time, Kelly's program was high profile, huge, well-known, because Steve McQueen, the greatest actor of that genre, was going to see him. And so the whole world of the vested interests in the cancer establishment, not the people who aren't good, they were aware that, oh, my gosh, what should happen if Steve McQueen should get cured with William Donald Kelly's protocol or American Biologics protocol?
Sure, sure.
Well, okay, here's the story. I don't think anybody knows this, but a handful of people. McQueen went home. He had a housekeeper, is my understanding. He also had a pet, a dog. And they went to the refrigerator. The refrigerator was kept well-stocked, and they pulled out some food, and they turned around as they were organizing the food, and the dog had hopped up on top of the counter and started eating the food, and instantly drops dead.
Mm.
Just drops over dead as soon as it had just gobbled up a few bites of whatever food was there. Well, Steve McQueen freaked out. He and his wife grabbed their clothes, didn't touch anything else in the house,
and
ran
went.
Back to American Biologics Hospital, and was well underway to getting well. Well, these mesothelioma tumors, and this is what the body will do when it's in its wisdom, in some cases, instead of dissolving it inside the body, it'll sometimes allow them to be pushed out of the body. And by the time it does that, the tumors are mostly dead. So it was a cosmetic issue for
yeah.
McQueen.
So they were popping all over the place, huh?
On his back, yeah. They were just exiting his lungs, and it takes a while for that to happen. But it was kind of ugly looking. But they wouldn't be there forever. They'd eventually fall off. Well, McQueen was a vain type of guy, and he didn't want them on his back. You understand. And so if they were dead, he said, why not just cut them off? And Canal said, oh, you're not strong enough for that. I discourage you from doing it. They won't hurt you. Just let them fall off natural. Well, one of the nurses that was working there was a man. He also worked at a local surgeon's clinic. And the man pulled Steve McQueen aside and said, look, I work for the surgeon. He's right down the street. It's a simple procedure. I'm sure he'll be happy to take these tumors that are dead off your back if you want. Well, Steve McQueen agreed against medical advice. He went, he hopped on the table, he dies on the table.
Ugh.
And the report in the worldwide newspapers was basically alternative medicine kills Steve McQueen.
Ugh. Unbelievable. I wonder how many people knew, John, that Steve McQueen was offered the role that Richard Dreyfuss got in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, I didn't. I did not know that.
He met Spielberg in a bar one day, and he was offered the job. And Spielberg says, "I just need to make sure you can cry on cue." And McQueen said, "That's one thing I can't do."
Oh.
And so he backed out of the part.
No kidding.
And went to Dreyfuss, and Dreyfuss did a great job in that.
Wow.
Hey, we're gonna take this break, and then we're coming back with more on Dr. Max Gerson and some other people. And then we'll take phone calls next hour as well with you. Do you have a website at all, John?
Not yet. When the books are finished, I will.
Okay. All right. And it's amazing information, I've got to tell you. Truly amazing information.
Yeah, it's been the joy of my research, yeah.
Has it caused any problems for you?
No, I got smart early on when I started watching all my colleagues getting deep doo-doo. I took another route and stayed out of trouble, and oftentimes I wind up helping colleagues that get themselves in trouble with their medical boards.
Okay, and I'm going to want some remedies from you, too, tonight when we come back. Okay, here we are back with Dr. John Apsley. We'll take your calls, as I mentioned, in about 30 minutes or so. John, give us another round robin here on Max Gerson.
Okay, good. We'll cover the next two at the same time because they're so closely related.
Okay.
We've already talked about Max Gerson. Specifically, he had a really bad case of migraine headaches, and he cured himself with a special diet that he put together. It involved a lot of raw food juicing, especially carrots, and involved liver, and even potatoes, cooked potatoes were allowed, fresh vegetables, fresh fruits. And during that time, the plague of the day was tuberculosis, and nobody had a cure for that. So he decided he'd try his miraculous diet therapy on TB. And in 1921, he and a very famous professor at the major university in Germany published a study that showed that for terminal skin cancer, tuberculosis, which is can be terminal, oftentimes is if it's very advanced, they had a 99% cure.
Huge.
Huge. So it went worldwide. And as time went on, of course, he was treating lung tuberculosis with great success, not quite that high a success rate, but very high. And then because he was Jewish, he fled Germany wisely ahead of time, came to the U.S., and people here started asking him to treat not only their tuberculosis but also other incurable diseases that included, of course, cancer. Well, since that time when he first started treating cancer, when they had access to foods that were grown in heavily mineralized soil, his success rate has been consistently no less than 30% from everything I've seen. With advanced terminal cancers. These are people, in many cases, that had already gone through all the conventional options and had failed. But many times they were just very advanced cancers that went to him first. Well, his program consists of thorough detoxification, thyroid medication, concentrated raw vegetables and liver juices, plus raw food diet therapy, lots of enzymes, and remineralization, which stresses oxygenation, which is iodine, vitamin C, niacin, aspirin, which we know helps the circulation, then there's potassium, no salt diet, and it emphasizes tweaking fevers, which activates the immune system to do the final digestion of the tumors.
Hmm.
So his caveat that he had to his program, he talked about a lot, but was missing in his protocol as to how to do it, related to the energy component, or he called it the autonomic nervous system, the transmission of signals, the proper signals of information that, of course, has to deal with the structured water. Now, one thing I failed to mention, I'm going to give you a big secret about the Lords of Water healing this woman, because it relates to this transmission of energy through our not only our nervous systems, but also through our blood vessels themselves. Not too many years ago, there was an investigator, researcher in acupuncture, who was brilliant, and he proved that what the meridians are of the body are actually invisible wires that are constructed of water. And he was able to show with lots of different techniques that was available to him back in the 70s and 80s that the meridian systems were not able to be found like a nerve could be or a blood vessel, because it was really part of the tissue that was in between the tissues, it allowed this current of water to go all over the body. Well, water remembers information. Structured water holds perfect information about how cells function properly. This is the key to homeopathic medicine. That's the difference between structured water in healthy cells versus chaotic water, you know, or what they call bulk water in tumors. The information doesn't get properly conducted through the tumor itself. It's in chaos. Well, Gerson really was into the autonomic nervous system and fixing that, but he didn't understand about this water aspect that he, but he did get his patients the structured water by way of the juicing. Well, this researcher in acupuncture was humiliated by refuting scientists who didn't know what the heck they were doing. And the poor guy wound up actually taking his own life. You know,
from
Asia, you know, they lose their face and they kill themselves, right? Well, back in the 90s, two acupuncture researchers, really well-credentialed, picked up his research and went, oh, my God, he was right. It was the currents of water were able to be discerned finally by taking people who had just died, who had signed away a waiver, and they injected radioactive water into the points where they were supposed to be the entry points for this water vessel or the meridian vessel. And sure enough, this radioactive tracer went right up the exact meridian. And from there, they were able to finally grab a hold of what the meridians were really about and find out that it was composed of structured water. So when that woman who was dying, a young woman, full of minerals, full of everything else that she needed, probably raised in a farm that had lots of minerals in the soil, who was just about ready to die from poor communication between cells, which is one of the essential features of cancer. It just grows right into all the cells around it. When she was doused with that healing water, that
must have gone into from the skin, right?
Exactly. It went right into the meridians, which were on top of the skin, and that goes everywhere else in the body. And she had an instantaneous healing. Well, we can get into other people that have done the same type of work with energy, organizing not only the water but the metals. Like, for example, Bjorn Nordenstrom, he was the radiologist that figured out how to do needle biopsy under radiographs. He was so well regarded that they didn't even bother to give him a Nobel Prize. Instead, they made him the chairman of the Nobel Prize Committee in Medicine.
They just gave him that, huh?
They just gave him it. He proved outside of the normal venues of science, but perfectly in touch with the scientific method, how electrical currents, when properly applied to tumors, will dissolve them instantly. And it's part of this metals organizing water and then dissolving, ramping up the immune system, cleaning out the fungus or other infections that are there and bringing the cells back to high gain. Okay, so any rate, this is Max Gerson. Well, Max Gerson didn't understand how to really tweak that energy component that was, I'm using his autonomic nervous system emphasis to bring us into the next guy, who is William Donald Kelly, who I mentioned had treated Steve McQueen first.
Okay.
All right. Well, William Donald Kelly had pancreatic cancer himself, and he cured himself of pancreatic cancer. And what he discovered was the only thing that Gerson hadn't quite elaborated on, which was how to do a metabolic typing profile to determine if your autonomic nervous system was too high in one way and too low in another. The autonomic nervous system has a brake and an accelerator. The flight or fight, when you get really excited, that's the sympathetic. And when you digest your food and sleep, that's the parasympathetic system.
And if you're going to attack it, you got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So when the body does the reverse of what it should do, it causes all sorts of not only neurological problems like depression and lack of sleep, but also since we do almost all of our healing when we do sleep in REM, it can screw up our ability to maintain our high gain state or to defeat an infection or whatever, right? Well, Kelly figured out what that was, and that's the only thing he added to it, but it was a huge thing. And he tweaked it also with more enzymes than Gerson was using. And while he was being investigated for treating cancer as a dentist in state after state after state, he would flee as he was curing cancer as he went, a physician from Cornell named Nick Gonzalez, who has an active practice in Manhattan today, was graduating from Cornell, and he wanted to go and investigate this quack named Dr. Kelly. But he was open-minded. He said, maybe he's not a quack. So he called up Kelly, and he said, look, can I come and can I see your records? And Kelly said, you can see anything you want. I just asked for a fair evaluation of what I'm doing. So Nick Gonzalez went to Dr. Robert Good, the premier immunologist in our country at that time. He was the first immunologist to ever head a major cancer research facility at Sloan Kettering. Robert Good said, well, you know, if you're going to go down and investigate Dr. Kelly, I mean, he's a dentist. This is a real risky thing you're doing with your career. But look, we know that mesothelioma and pancreatic cancer right now are 100% incurable.
Well, yeah. Case in point, Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, right? Michael Landon, you know, a whole list of people.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, look, if you can, we can create best case series here. This is way before the NCI accepted it in 92. They said, look, we know that we can't touch it. So if you can go and specifically go to his mesothelioma patients or his pancreatic cancer, just do one or the other, if he has enough cases, if he's able to cure any of those, or if those patients are living after 5 years with no signs of disease, then you've proven by process of elimination to scientific certainty that he has a cure for cancer. So he said, okay, great, I'm going to pick pancreatic cancer. So Gonzalez went down and went to through his records and found 25 absolute clear-cut cases, well-documented, of pancreatic cancer. He started calling everyone. This is a true story. The first 11 people that he called had all died. So he was real disappointed and about ready to quit.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. So he decided to call the 12th person. The next entire number of people that he called were all alive and thriving. What a crazy thing. He just randomly...
And in that order.
In that order. He just picked the files and called, and the first 11 were all dead. So when he called the rest and they were all living, he said to himself, what the heck happened? And he went back and verified that all 11 of the ones that had died hadn't followed through on Kelly's program. They didn't do it.
Who had died? But the others?
The others had all religiously adhered to it. And one of them was well over 11 years past initial diagnosis. Absolute proof that Kelly's program cured pancreatic cancer.
That's amazing. All right, let's buzz through real quickly for just a moment and give me some bullet points on what you recommend people to do.
Okay. Well,
first and foremost, stay with your doctor, right?
Yes, stay with your doctor. And, we're going to skip to the end, but that's fine. I suggest they get the book Hypothyroidism Type 2, and they use that as their starting as their as the most important book they can buy, because thyroid is essential for people with cancer. And not just missing it. You can't miss being prescribed properly. You have to get the proper prescription, and it has to get your body temperature up to normal.
Do you believe that everyone who has cancer has a thyroid issue?
I would say that I have never seen a case that did not have low thyroid function when it's appraised according to the Barnes protocol. So that's number one. The second thing is detoxification. I recommend for everyone to get 10 colonics from a licensed colonic hygienist. And then the second thing I recommend that everyone does is to get a juicer.
Okay.
And just start juicing organic vegetables and fruits.
Or you can buy it too, right?
Yeah, you can. You organic. Can. You have to buy. You have to buy it in its raw state, which Aduella used to be all raw, but then they had some problems. So it's that you have to have them in their raw state, and they have to be grown not just organic, but they have to be grown on soil that's laced with rock dust.
Why?
It makes a huge difference. Well, because that's where the only place you can get these colloidal metals.
Really? Okay.
These colloidal metals. Anything you cook will destroy
Wipes
the colloid
out.
State. But if the metals aren't in the food to begin with, then you're in trouble. Now, I've done exhaustive studies on the mineral content of both conventionally grown foods and organic foods, and there's not a lot of difference. There is some difference, but not a lot of difference. But when you add rock dust to the soil, which is a flowery-like, almost dust form of minerals, then you get a whole different fruit. I go into this example. It's a really great story. I'll tell it real quickly. When I was not feeling so well myself many years ago in the 70s, I traveled to Finhorn. And Finhorn had magical gardens that grew flowers year-round, even in the middle of a snowstorm, without any problems. Well, I was out during the three-week tour that they do, and I was out actually harvesting some of the foods that they grew on their property with the special techniques they used. And I was around tomatoes, and I grabbed one, and I was really hungry, and I ate it, and I swear I had a religious experience. I had no idea. I was like, what just happened? It was like something turned on in both my nervous system but also my mouth that I had never experienced life to be like.
So how do you know, though, that you're buying foods that were grown on that kind of rock dust?
It's better if you grow them yourself.
Not everybody can do that, John.
Well, you know, I bet you that if people needed to, they could find a way. It doesn't take but a few weeks during the warm time of year to do it, or you could go down and join the CSA, the Community Sustained Agricultural, and ask them to put rock dust on their soil, which I normally do. And for $25 a month, they give you all the fruits and vegetables you need. So CSA is nationwide, and just ask them to use rock dust while they're doing their organic techniques, and you've got a ready supply. But there's other ways you do with sprouts that you do at home and that type of thing. But that's key. That's the magic. That's the magic of Finhorn. Well, to contrast the difference between that tomato and another, I then loaded my tomatoes up onto the truck for it to be delivered to their kitchens. And on the way I turned out of the truck, I grabbed another tomato that I thought was from the property, and I ate it, and I couldn't taste it. And I made this really weird expression on my face, like, what the heck is this? And the driver who was walking out helping to bring things on board saw my face, and he goes, yeah. It's really amazing the difference, isn't it? Because he had seen it so many times before. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you ate one of our tomatoes, and now you're eating that tomato, which I just picked up an hour down the road from an organic farm, and you know the difference now, don't you? And I went, boy, this just changed my life. I'm going to figure out what this is all about. And remember, my mom had just had this a cancer experience, so I said, this is it. Somehow this is the magic of how people stay well. Well, that whole thing has to do with rock dust, and by the way, this not only does this control this mechanism of healing within our body at these near quantum speeds, but as your promotion for this event implied, it also has a great deal to do with how weather patterns and life all across the oceans and the land masses maintain themselves in proper order. When the minerals exhaust, there will be extreme changes in weather, but not for global warming, other than that being the motor to a deep freeze. And so this is an issue we can get to maybe some other time when we have time to get into that. But the point is that our bodies, you know, from dust to dust, we're made from clay, we go back to clay, but that not just dust and not just clay, but minerals in a special form that do not dissolve in water. They suspend themselves
in water.
And
that apparently is critical.
And that structures the water, and that makes all the communication happen and everything else go into high gain. That's
what,
right.
Now, what about the sodium bicarbonate? Do we need to get that into our system?
All right. So in a nutshell, if we stop making hydrochloric acid to digest our foods, we're not making bicarb. And bicarb pulls the blocking agent that prevents the minerals from going back into the cells to make the high-gain state. So baking soda is at the top of this entire chain of events, and on top of that, it kills Candida albicans on contact. And we now know that cancer and fungus are very closely associated. It's nearly impossible to not culture Candida albicans out of tumors. It's nearly impossible to discern the difference between a cancer cell and a fungus.
All right, but do you ingest it? What do you do? How do you do it?
Well, this is where we can get into trouble, because if people start taking baking soda in improper ways, they can do themselves a great deal of harm.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you can't just drink it, right?
You know, there are methods that you can do under supervision with doctors who are trained. And unfortunately, there's hardly any, right? Because of this political issue with Tullio Simoncini not being able to really
right.
teach other doctors how to do it. There will be available literature in my books, and down the road, my goal is to teach other physicians and have Tullio teach other physicians how to properly use baking soda to deal with, you know, as a major tool to defeat cancer.
Interesting. All right, stay with us. We're going to take a half hour phone calls with you, John, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Got calls lining up for you, Dr. John, so let's go to some calls. You ready?
I am.
Let's go to Niagara Falls, New York, first of all, east of the Rockies. Hey, James, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dr. John Epsby. Hi, I'm Dr. Beeler, Henry G. Beeler. He was a movie star's physician out of California. This is back in the 20s. Healed Gloria Swanson of a fibroid tumor the size of a grapefruit. But in his book called Food is Your Best Medicine, he talked about the three most important elements called sodium, potassium, and calcium, which are the plant obtains from what is called the alkaline earths, are the three elements the body needs the greatest. My mom's a 40-year cancer survivor,
right?
And she had cancer back in the late 60s, early 70s, and Gloria Swanson at the time, she died in 86, but my mom got a letter from her, and she put an X on Dr. Beeler's book, and she used, after she was butchered by conventional therapies, a hysterectomy as well as a mastectomy, but she put Dr. Beeler's book into practice, and what happened was, is the tumors that were on her right side of her body eventually dissolved. The body was able to digest it through the digestive tract, because digestion is used two ways. One, for elimination, as well as through digestion of the foods. But Dr. Beeler talked about it. I was wondering if you ever heard of Dr. Beeler, and talk about the three elements that he prescribed. He used zucchini for the sodium. He used potassium. He used green beans. And on the calcium, he used celery.
All right. Reaction to that, John.
Yeah, Beeler's work, I know it well. Part of this whole thing about metabolic typing, he was one of the greats that advanced that whole concept of how diet needed to match the type of a patient, not just the cancer the patient had. And so Beeler's work fit in really nicely to William Donald Kelly's work. But I think that Kelly really blessed the whole idea of metabolic typing. And even today in Manhattan, where Nick Gonzalez practices, and he has a big practice on pancreatic cancer, he's the world's expert in that now. So if you look at this, and I really appreciate the caller, because if you look at the history of how people have cured themselves with these pioneers, they all add up to a point where we're having this conversation tonight on radio with George. And we all stand on the giants of these previous people, but we can also say that we've really advanced the work, and thank goodness, because your mother had a much stronger constitution, let's face it, than you do, because the minerals in the soil started exhausting and were documented by the Senate, U.S. Senate, in 1936. So by 1962, let me give you an example. In 1948, we had 152 milligrams of iron in an average bowl of spinach, very important in cancer. By 1961, an average bowl of spinach had less than 2 milligrams of iron in it.
Wow.
Okay? Very important in cancer for this metals, which iron is, that activates this gel state or the high gain state of cell energy, okay?
What about supplements, John?
Yeah, this is the thing, that Kelly was the first that brought this forth, that we have to make up for this loss by supplementing. And we have to do it in a proper way. And, you know, diet is the number one place to get it from, especially the juices from the fruits and the vegetables like zucchini. But in the raw state and from soil that has been heavily laced with the rock dust, we can take supplements in order to overcome that if we don't have access to rock dust grown organic vegetables and fruits. While we're working toward that, we can use supplements. And there are fantastic supplements out now that are specifically what we're talking about now, because there's a ton of supplements out there that George and everyone else in the audience, we are not treating cancer with what we're talking about tonight. We are treating the system that repairs at 7.5 quintillion times a day. That's the system that will cure the cancer for you. The sodium bicarb and the other tools that we have are the priming agents that specifically get that system to work again. Now, this is before Beeler had the entire picture, but boy, he sure formed an important part of the puzzle. He was very, very critical with that.
Where do people get rock dust for their gardens?
Well, you can find it at any cement manufacturing facility. You just go get
it. Give me a bag, right? It's not cement, is it?
No. It's the dust that screws up all of their equipment, so they don't want it. You can go down there and haul that off. It's the real fine stuff that will make you choke because it goes up in the air real easily. When Mount St. Helens erupted, a great deal of the ash fell in a little place in west of where I live in middle between Spokane and Seattle, and that they just dumped it into a quarry. And boy, I tell you, that's 100% beautiful fertilizer for anyone wanted.
Some places online sell this stuff too, I guess.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, you can get it for $25 for
a big bag.
Yeah, and it costs shipping, but that's right, George. You can do it that way.
Interesting. Okay, next up, let's go to Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hello, Shelley. Go ahead.
Hello, George. This is Shelley. Oh, my gosh. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thoroughly enjoy you. I'm so happy you guys have took me on to talk to me because I'm so desperate right now. Dr. John S.P., thank you for listening to me. My cat, Maggie, was diagnosed with mammary carcinoma. I actually found it. It's very, very early. There were three nodules I found on her left side. And the only reason I would have found it is because I had a friend that died of breast cancer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, could this happen to my little kitty? I just got back from a veterinary clinic, major university oncology clinic. Her diagnosis is mammary carcinoma and also squamous cell carcinoma. The nodules that were removed from her 2 weeks ago by my local veterinarian were 2 by 2 by 3 millimeters each. And she also has some other issues, which is hyperthyroidism. Possibly they don't have that. We won't have the test until tomorrow. They did an abdominal ultrasound, thoracic radiograph, chemistry, blood work, you name it. They did everything up there. They're recommending a radical mastectomy on both sides and chemotherapy.
Right. Well, first of all, it sounds like you've got some very. I went to Michigan State, so they have a great veterinarian school.
Did you? My sisters.
Awesome. These people were just most awesome. Oh my gosh.
Yes, in fact, that's where I started off in pre-vet. I think that you're in good hands. What I would suggest is that you remineralize your cat specifically with if you determine that she does not have hyperthyroidism, I would consider adding in some minerals that include iodine, and you can ask your vet for the supplement that they suggest for that. But more importantly, I wouldn't do anything for you to treat your cat, but I would have you read up on black and yellow salve, and you can go online on Google it and a black and yellow salve. And what this does is it's a drawing agent. It pulls tumors that might be remaining after the surgery and after the chemo, once the cat has already been through the protocol. What you'll read about is a well tried and tested method of herbology that helps to pull remaining unwanted tissue and tumors out of the body harmlessly. But don't treat the cat with what I'm saying. Just read up on it and really become an expert in it from A to Z in case you need a plan B. And then if you decided that this is something you wanted to pursue, seek out, search around, go to Whole Foods, seek out a some of the osteopaths there that might be into alternative medicine, maybe an alternative vet that's there. Seek out someone that can guide you with the use of black and yellow salve. It might take some research, but you should be able to find somebody.
Let's go to Portland, Oregon now. First time caller is Tom. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hello, George. It's a privilege to talk to Dr. You. I have listened to Coast to Coast for 20 years, and this is the first time I get through.
Super.
Dr. SP, I have suffered from chronic fatigue syndrome for 17 years, and also I have HIV. I have several questions for you. Number one, is there any possibility that I can see you? The other question, any clinic that I can attend or treatment, all my specialists that I've seen in Oregon and Texas, they said there's no cure for chronic fatigue syndrome. And I would like some input from you.
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, let me dispel that myth. There's absolutely a cure for chronic fatigue syndrome. And again, Tom, the place to start is to read the book Hypothyroidism Type 2 by Mark Starr. And that's double R at the end of star. It will explain a great deal of that. Mark Starr was a rehab specialist, a physician who specializes in fibromyalgia, which is the other side of the coin to chronic fatigue syndrome. But you must have proper thyroid evaluation and proper thyroid treatment by a physician. But read the book first so that you can find that physician. Now, I would recommend, since you're in Portland, to seek out a naturopath. Now, I know that community down there pretty well, and what I'll have you do is to email me at japsley.msn.com, and I will tag into the naturopathic community there and find a physician there who's very familiar with using thyroid properly. That's number one. Number two, of course, iodine is very important. And there's all sorts of websites that are really excellent about educating on iodine. And then in regards to the HIV, there's an immune enhancer that has proven effective over the years that is a type of oil that stabilizes a type of oxygen radical that's very common to the white blood cells. And as you know, in HIV, there's a group of white blood cells that become paralyzed, or they actually wind up becoming in very small number. And with this product, you can help with that situation as well. So if you'll email me at japsley.msn.com, I'll get you that information.
And let's spell your last name for us, John.
Sure. It's A, P as in Paul, S as in Sam, L-E-Y, at msn.com.
japsley@msn.com.
That's correct.
Next up, we go to San Juan Islands in Washington, Gladreal, west of the Rockies.
Hey, oh, George, thank you so much for taking my call. This
sure thing.
Is awesome. I've been a 15-year listener. Love you. Dr. Apsley, I battle candida all the time. It's like a chronic back and forth, round and round thing. And I wondered if you were familiar with Dr. Bach's flower remedies, because he's got one called rock water that I've never used. And I wondered if that would help with the minerals.
Now, I'm really grateful for this call. Let me just announce here tonight that all of this fungal, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia group of syndromes is directly involved with low thyroid and lack of iodine.
Okay. Now,
okay,
would kelp help that?
I'm sorry?
Would kelp help the iodine?
Yes, but when you see a physician who understands this, and there are plenty in this state, in the state of Washington,
mm-hmm.
There are supra mega doses of iodine that can be given under direct supervision. But don't do it on your own, but with,
okay.
With
because if you have a heart problem, for example, too much iodine could hurt you, right?
Oh, okay.
That's correct. Now the people in Japan, they consume at least 10 milligrams of iodine a day. That's a huge amount compared to what the recommended daily allowance is here in this country. But they're used to it, and they've done it all their life. But they have virtually no cancer, none of this chronic fatigue. They don't have any of these diseases as a direct result of that iodine intake. Well, people can build that up slowly under direct supervision by people that are experts in the field. However, there is a thing called iodism, which is when you take too much. And that causes a completely reversible group of symptoms that aren't, they're relatively harmless. For example, you'll start noticing a little bit more hair starting to fall out when you take too much iodine. That's completely reversible when you quit taking the iodine. But again, I say that to warn everyone, make sure you see a physician that understands how to properly administer iodine. So read the book, Hypothyroidism, Type 2. That's where you start. And then go online, and if you email me, I will give you the best website that I have found on iodine, so you can educate yourself on that.
When are your works going to come out, John? When are they ready, your books?
They'll be at the end of this year. They'll be both a professional book by the same title as well as the lay book. So people will know what to do at home, and especially if they're dead broke and if they have no other options or they can't find a physician, they'll have a great tool of resources for people to know what to do there. And then for the physician, it will have complete documentation from A to Z, from the peer-reviewed medical literature that we discussed tonight, as to how to go about treating cancer along these understandings.
Okay, next up we go to Houston. Hey, Mark, take it away.
Thank you very much for allowing me in, and this has been a terrific show. I've stayed up to listen to it. Dr. Apsley, I've seen on several websites, and also apparently in the practice of Qigong, the claim that cancers can't live in an alkaline body. You believe that that's true? If so, how does one alkalize the body? And then as a second question, do you believe that consuming food-grade diatomaceous earth is helpful?
Yes to the last question. Food-grade diatomaceous earth is wonderful. To the first point, a qualified yes. High alkaline states of tissues are the only kind of tissues that are found in high gain energy states. So it's an absolute requirement that the cells are of high pH, meaning about 7.45 on the scale. This is inside the cell. Baking soda, of course, alkalinizes the system. And this is one way that cancer can be defeated. But the normal ways of alkalinizing a person that I've studied, that I'm familiar with, and I've been at this for 30 years, do not work. They do not work because there's a lack of the person's own production of sodium bicarb, and there's a lack of oxygen in the system. The two must go hand in hand. So when you're alkalinizing the body, in other words, you can take all the alkaline foods you want. You can take all you want. And because there's that blocking agent that we talked about earlier on, which is hydrogen that comes off of all food, that will block the ability for the alkalinizing metals to go inside the cell where it has to go. I hope everyone gets that. Alkaline diets by themselves do not work. They help generally. But if you have advanced cancer, you have to get that hydrogen out of play. And that's done by oxygen and by sodium bicarb.
Fascinating. Well, we're almost out of time here, Dr. John. First of all, I want to thank you for the information you have brought to us tonight.
You're very, very welcome, George, and it's been a great pleasure.
You've got to speed up your works. You've got to get them out quicker.
I'm trying.
You really do. But you know what? This is the whole picture tells you, though, how Big Pharma doesn't want to help in this area.
Specifically, Big Pharma at the very top echelons does not. That I would say is true. I would say again, there are lots of researchers who are hired and work for Big Pharma that don't have that sentiment at all. But you'd be surprised how fast they're dropped like a hot potato once they discover a cheap way to treat cancer.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. John Aspie.